Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Chris Moore!
They love me!
I think you got him open, Chris Moore.
This is exciting.
Oh my goodness. Moving up. Sports
Radio 66. You work here 25 years, you'll get one too.
Three more years, fingers crossed.
7:05 on the fan. That's my nemesis, Herskowitz. You'll hear from her again as the night progresses. We welcome you to the program. Matt Casey on the other side. He'll be interesting in this interview because he's a Jet fan. And Mr. Hoffman as well on the other side. And they will take care of us. John Harper in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll talk the general sports world with him. I'd just like to know, like, the Vaqueros and Harpers of the world, I'd like to know what they're thinking about right now because they have to come up with columns, et cetera, and all kinds of things to find that they think you will be interested in. So we'll see what's on John's mind and how he looks at the Mets streak and the Yankees situation and obviously the football as well. But right now, nice enough to join us from Whistle Sports and TurnOnTheJets.com, our friend Joe Caparoso. Mr. C, how are we?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you coming on and giving us a little Jet insight. There's an awful lot of optimism. To me, it's a little bit over the top considering my views on the roster and my doubts on the head coach, but it's fine. It beats pessimism, and if it doesn't work out, we'll have plenty of time for pessimism later. So I'll take optimism over pessimism. What are your thoughts about why people are so excited about this team? We know that Darnold created a lot of anticipation for fans, and they can't wait for year two. Is it more than that?
Well, I think change is exciting, and there was a lot of change this offseason. New head coach, new general manager, new defensive and offensive coordinator, and a very active offseason. We brought in a couple well-known big-name guys in Le'Veon Bell, C.J. Mosley, and to a lesser extent, Jamison Crowder and Kelechi Osemele. Also, you know, just getting a guy out of retirement to play offensive line, Ryan Khalil. We'll see how much of a solve that actually is, but it will be better than what Jonathan Harrison would have been. But people are excited because it's not Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan again. Does that necessarily mean the Jets are going to win 10 or 11 games? Not necessarily. They should be better than the 4-5 win team they were previously. The answer is probably somewhere in the middle of the people who think they're going to win 10 and 11 games and what they used to be as a 4-5 win team.
We have heard a lot about the corners being part of the biggest concern, and it's obviously great that that May is back on the field in the safety spot because, you know, you get labeled, you know, by fans and by media, and it's like, forget about him. He's never coming back. Kind of like Ellsbury with the Yankees. You start to think, you know, if he comes back, it's great, but I'm not counting on him because you just get reputation. You get labeled, whether it's fair or not. So good to have him back, but how big a concern is the general defensive backfield?
It's a massive concern because, first off, we need to see if May can stay in the field because they don't have anyone else with any type of real experience to play alongside Jamal Adams. Rontez Miles is really more of a special teamer. Doug Middleton struggled a lot last year when he had to replace May. And then at corner, you're basically counting on your number one corner to be Tremaine Johnson, who struggled a lot last year and is hurt again. And cornerbacks generally don't get better and healthier when they hit 30, which he is at age range now. Your number two corner is Darryl Roberts, who was their fourth and fifth corner over the past few years. Was good in that role, probably going to be stretched thin, being a 16-game starter. And then their nickel is Brian Poole, who has been okay in that role for the Falcons the past few years, probably about a lateral move from Buster Screen, who was very inconsistent, hit or miss for the Jets. And then after that, they don't have anybody who has any type of NFL experience. Their top backups were Derek Jones and Parry Nickerson, who both were terrible in the preseason opener. They actually cut Jones already. Nickerson doesn't really have any experience and had a tough opening to the preseason. And beyond that, it's a lot of guys that have grabbed off the waiver wires, undrafted free agent, Kayvon Brown. If one injury hits, which already has with Tremaine Johnson, it's fair to say it's the worst group of cornerbacks in the NFL. And it's kind of reminiscent of the group they had in the 2014 team, which is a real problem for them in the early parts of the year when they went against some good passing attacks.
What about Quinnen Williams? There seems to be so much excitement about this kid and his attitude and his He seems to love doing what he's doing, which we love out of all athletes. We'd like to see more of that. The guys look like they're having fun and want to be where they are. There's a lot of anticipation about this kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fun guy to root for, easy guy to root for. He gave a ton of interesting and funny quotes in his brief NFL career already. And he's only 21. And a lot of people would tell you that he was the best player in this most recent NFL draft. The Jets were able to get him at 3. So there are going to be high expectations. I think you got to temper it with that. Again, he's 21. He had one massive year at Alabama that kind of came out of nowhere. It doesn't mean that he won't develop into being the player most of us expect him to be, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be an all-pro from day one. And he's in a situation where he doesn't have to play 100% of the snaps right away because he'll be rotating through with Henry Anderson and Leonard Williams, but really should be an impact player this year. And there's no reason he can't have a similar year that Sheldon Richardson had for them a while ago in 2013 when he won Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think Williams is a similar but slightly better prospect than he was coming out. And Richardson made an immediate impact like that. And Williams could be a guy who grabbed, you know, 6, 7, 8 sacks in his rookie year if used the right way.
As we look at the offensive side, you know, we could talk about Darnold all day, but, you know, in the end, we're just going to watch him play, watch him develop, see how he handles winning and losing, success and failure, all that, and we'll make our judgments. And it's always nice in year two because there's certain things that you know you have to get out of the way. The Gase Darnold relationship is pretty fascinating. I mean, it is, you know, we knew that. And to me, Gase, from my brief look at him and look at his career, is more a coordinator than a head coach. But he's the head coach here, and he's here for a large part because Darnold's here. What are you expecting, and how special do you think the relationship will be, and what are the keys to it in your mind? They're being on the same page mentally, understanding football the same way, or understanding offense the same way? How do you look at it?
I mean, it seems to be a good working relationship so far. It's early days, and I think, are they looking at how they want to play offense the same way? Gase talks about wanting to play more tempo. I don't see that being anything that Darnold would have a problem with. That is something that we saw in the first preseason game from the Giants. You know, are they comfortable always being in that shotgun three wide? Are they seeing the same thing from a defensive perspective and approaching the game the same way? And is Gase going to learn from what didn't work in Miami, where he was accused of, you know, being too stubborn a lot of the times with some of his play calls and some of his schemes? Will he give Darnold the flexibility to adjust in-game and on the fly, or is he going to micromanage him a little more? I think it's more than reasonable to be very excited about Darnold. I think, especially with the way he finished the season and with the skill set that he has, Jets fans should believe that they finally may have found the guy. I think with Gase, there's more question marks. And I think Darnold is going to take a leap this year, no matter who the coach was. The question is, can he take that much more of a leap because him and Gase are that much on the same page? You know, different personalities, I would say, from what we've seen of both of them. That could be fine as long as they're on the same page, you know, when it comes to play calling. And I really think the Jets' offense is going to be probably much better than their defense this year, which is rare for this organization. It's not something we normally say. But if the offensive line can hold up, that's a major if. There's a lot of talent at the skill positions, more talent than they've had in a while. Really since the 2015 season where they had that one, you know, flash in the pan with Marshall and Decker. But there's talent at receiver, running back, and tight end when Herndon comes back from suspension, and there's no reason that Darnold shouldn't be able to take advantage of that.
From turnonthejets.com, we're talking to Joe Caparoso on the New York Jets and their 2019 outlook right now. Williams, interesting, running that defense. You know, there's a lot expected about what he will do. The thing about Williams from a fan perspective, and I think this is part of the optimism too, is it just doesn't seem like he's going to settle for mediocre. In watching the Jets the last few years, it seems like they were too content, at least from a fan standpoint, with the outcome of a game, positive or negative. It's another day at the office. Let's go back to work. I don't get the impression, and I don't think fans do, that Greg Williams is going to take failure and just go, it's okay. We'll try better next week. We'll try to do better. It's not his way.
Yeah, I mean, look, he has one of the more fiery personalities in the NFL, and that came out on Hard Knocks last year, and he's someone that fans are going to naturally gravitate towards. You know, he's pumping the crowd up at training camp.
I saw that.
He's got all the quotes. He's, you know, screaming on the sideline like a maniac. And he's been up and down as a coordinator. He did very good work with Cleveland last year as an interim head coach. He's been a little inconsistent throughout his career, and I don't think Jet fans should mistake liking his personality into thinking that he's Wade Phillips or Bill Belichick. Will he be a needed change of pace from what they have with Todd Bowles from a personality perspective? Absolutely. And I think the Jets, like we've said a lot about them, you know, with their past three defensive coaches, they're going to be aggressive. They're going to blitz a lot. They're probably going to give up some big plays, but can they force turnovers and make enough big plays to negate that? And Williams is going to have his hands full because that secondary is thin, and they don't have a proven pass rusher who can get 10 sacks in a season yet. So despite them having a lot of talent up the middle with Quinton Williams and Leonard Williams and C.J. Mosley and Jamal Adams, coaching around that secondary will be a big challenge for him.
How do you view the receiving core in the scheme of grading them versus the league? Where are the Jet receivers? We tend to overrate our own guys, I think, because we want to, and we want them to be, among elite receivers. But I don't know that the Jets have an elite receiver. How do you feel about that core, and how do you look? Who do you look at as the keys to whether they're successful or not? Or is it going to be really a very much a team effort from a receiving standpoint?
I mean, I think it's going to be by committee. I think Robbie Anderson is the de facto number one receiver, and Jet fans are rightly excited about him, but he's never had a 1,000-yard season. And Jamison Crowder was a good addition, much better than Jermaine Kearse would have been in the slot. And a guy who could very easily catch 70 or 80 passes in this offense and has been productive in Washington before. Again, never been a 1,000-yard receiver. We all love Quincy Enunwa when he's out there, but he's a tough time staying healthy. So those three, you know, if they're out there for 16 games, they're probably middle of the pack. Somewhere in that like 14 to 20 range, depending on how you feel about Anderson in the game and if he's going to develop and get over that hump of being a 1,000-yard receiver.
Should Le'Veon Bell make them better because of the decoy factor and the real factor?
Absolutely. And Bell, if it's not going to be Crowder who leads the team in receptions, it will be Bell who's regularly used that receiver and full time on memory. So there's a lot of versatility and a lot of flexibility, which they haven't had in recent years. So you have to look at them not just as a group of receivers. You look at them as a pass-catching unit. You have those three. You have Bell. You have Montgomery. When he's back from extension, you have Chris Herndon. That's six pretty good options for Sam Darnold. And you could spread the ball around and see, you know, Bell and Crowder catching 75-ish passes. Anderson, you know, somewhere in the 60s. And you have a new one, Herndon, could be 50-ish catch guys. You're not going to have the one guy who has 110 catches and 1,400 yards. They don't have that type of player. But if Bell is somewhat like he was in Pittsburgh, they don't necessarily need that because Bell's going to be the focal point of the offense anyway.
Yeah, and it'll be fun to watch how they. That's where I'm confident about Gase, by the way, scheming and taking advantage of the assets that he has. His leadership scares me, but we'll let that play out and be what it is. Give me a special team rundown. We know about Catanzaro today retiring and Bertolette being the new kicker for now anyway. Who knows with kickers in the NFL? But they certainly, you know, took a step back with Maccagnan, et cetera, on not re-signing return guy, not going back with the kicker. Not, you know, the punting situation is still something that I think has to be a concern, at least a little bit anyway. How are you feeling about the special teams, and have they paid enough attention to them, and what's Douglas think about them in your mind?
I mean, it was sort of a weird approach this offseason, right? They're the number one ranked special teams unit in DVOA. It's the best special teams unit they've had in a long time, and they let the kicker go, the kick and punt returner go, both of whom were, you know, all pros. They let their top tackler go, Terrence Brooks, who went to the Patriots, and they let Kevin Pierre-Louis go block 2 points last year. So basically, they took their four best special team players and, you know, passed them. I mean, a lot of times those guys can be interchangeable parts, but if they're not, you have a situation now where we don't have any idea who the kicker is going to be. I wouldn't bet on it being, you know, who is currently on the roster. I think they're going to continue to cycle through a lot of different options, find a veteran with a little more experience. A returner, maybe a guy like Greg Dortch, the undrafted rookie, ends up taking that job. He looked good in the opener and probably is the leader in the clubhouse to be the kick and the punt returner. I think Marquand Edwards is, you know, I think he's fine as a punter. I don't think he's great. I think the hope is that Dortch can help, you know, make them miss Andre Roberts a little less, and they can find a competent kicker like they've done the past few years. You know, it was Canzano in 2017, who they kind of picked off the scrap heap and was really good. Same with Jason Myers last year. Obviously, he's in Seattle now, but kicker's definitely going to be a major question for them until we see them add someone who goes out and produces in the preseason game, doesn't miss multiple extra points.
Yeah, I mean, that Definitely got people's attention, and I don't think a lot of tears were shed that he is no longer a part of the program. Joe, good conversation. We appreciate it. We'll check in again before the season starts and see you know, how things have been weeded out and what that roster starts to shape up and look at. Continued success with TurnOnTheJets.com. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
There you go. That's Joe Caparoso giving us the scoop on the New York Football Jets. So, yeah, there's a lot to be determined there. A lot to be determined. I do like the unis. I think they look sharp. So that's something. Anyway, and I am cautiously optimistic to watch that offense play and to see what it looks like. I'm not worried about the opponents right now. I'm not. You know, the opponents are not my concern. And I do think we spend a little too much time. If our guys do what our guys are supposed to do, whatever that team is that you're rooting for, unless they're really mismatched in terms of talent and they just can't do it, which rarely happens, but it does every once in a while. Otherwise, it's generally how you play. Look at how the Mets lost today. They gave the game away. You know, it's not what the Nationals did. It's what the Mets did that cost them that game. So, see how it plays out. Erica's back. Why? Contractually obligated. She would never come into a room where I was by myself unless there was a financial benefit to it. And there is. She does get paid for this shift. Enough for gas money back to New Jersey, which is really all she needs because she's independently wealthy. She has so many talents.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.